Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 66.
Woo!
Of The Morning After. I am your host, Jesse Kiefer.
And I'm co-hosting, as usual. I'm co-hosting. Coasting and co-hosting. Jen Telek. Hello, Miss Kiefer.
Hello, Jen. How's your week been?
Oh my God, it's just been lovely. The spring is finally upon us. Although, every time I have to retire my faux fur pelt, it's a rough day. But now I'm just to a light, brisk windbreaker. And I've made the transition. It's been good. What happened this week? A lot happened this week. We're recording a new Genitari album, which I'm very excited about.
What's it called?
It's called Fish Gods. It is Egyptology themed.
Genitari is Jen's satire rap act that's actually... it's funny, but it's serious. You're really good at it.
It's getting very serious. It's getting very serious.
Especially if we're talking about fish gods.
What's happened in your week?
My week has been a solid week of inventory, crazy wine classes. Had a huge wine tasting at Terroir Tribeca for Zev Rovine, who's been on the show.
Hey, Zev.
Gotta love him. But weren't we talking about spring means rebirth. And you recently, you quit the restaurant industry.
I did. I retired. I wouldn't say quit. I retired from the restaurant industry after years of laborious efforts. But two nights ago, I made my triumphant return because my former restaurant...
The Renaissance.
I did have a Renaissance. They needed someone because all of their staff was at a catering event. And they said, could you come in for one night? And I was like, yeah. And I was so excited to be back and see all of my friends and my coworkers and my regulars. And after about 10 minutes, I was like, nope. Once I left the building, it was like all knowledge just fled my brain. But so I was struggling. I had a 16 top of very angry people. And I also served...
Could you keep up still?
I served the First Minister of Scotland that night.
He came into Highlands.
I served him a lot of Glenmorangie Nectar Dior.
It's legit Scotch food?
It is legit. It is legit. Speaking of legit, also, I want to give a shout out. Last night, I was able to attend and volunteer at an event for a dear friend, Mike Pop, who's... currently sick, and so we were able to throw him this awesome fundraiser, and he's a brilliant photographer, and we were selling some of his work to help pay for his treatments, and we sold we raised $10,000 last night for him. It was hosted at the School of Visual Arts, very kindly allowed us to use one of their spaces, and it was just an amazing evening of young people celebrating being together and yet at once like facing mortality and celebrating the amazing life and existence of this young dude. But we had a brief scare right before because some of our wine was stolen, which is why I called you in a panic.
I can't believe somebody would do that.
I know.
Did you ever find the culprit?
We didn't, but we figured it out and wine was had and it was a lovely evening. So I just wanted to say hello to Mike.
Is there any way to for people out there to donate to Mike?
Yeah, actually, he has what's called an Ever Ribbon, which is essentially a crowd-raising site for it's used for various things, but specifically, in our case, for someone who's sick and paying for his treatment. But he has a site, I believe it's popstrong.com. His name is Mike Pop. I'm going to find out on our break, and I'll come back and give you the site for sure. But today, on a happier note, is a bomb ass show.
No, yeah, two very handsome bearded gentlemen.
Yes. and a handsome non-bearded lady.
Exactly. Oh, and Larry the boar. That is the boar's head that mm-hmm. stays with us every day. We have Tiago Silva, corporate pastry chef for the EMM group.
Yes, hello. Thanks for having me.
How many restaurants are you working with in New York City right now?
Currently in New York City, 4. Overall, 5. There's Catch Miami as well.
And he is a pastry chef to the stars and a cake sculpting artist master.
Madman.
Madman's good.
You are a cake sculpting madman. I was just privileged enough to look at a couple of his recent works, and I'm terrified. They were so lifelike, I was terrified. I don't actually believe they were cakes.
It jumped out of the
phone. You just showed me Google images.
No, no.
Those are remarkable.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk more about your stuff. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Second, also, not second handsome, but second bearded handsome gentleman in the room, my good friend Nick Padilla.
How's it going?
He has, he's embarking on the terrifying journey of opening a restaurant right now, and I'm so proud of him.
Good on you, bro.
He is Mr. Chef. Can I call you Mr. Chef?
Yeah, I guess, just for today.
I know both of us love Arrested Development, so can I be Mr. Manager today?
Yeah, you can be Mr. Manager.
Okay, perfect.
Can I be Mr. Bangs?
Who's going to be Bob blah, blah?
I'll do that.
Okay,
I'll Tiago. Tiago's
perfect.
Blah, blah.
I mean, yeah, Tony Danza, right?
Yep.
Or no. Scott Baio. Scott Baio, who plays Bob blah, blah. Anyway, so the restaurant's called Alameda in Greenpoint, and you've got an awesome team who's helping you build that out, right?
Yeah, we're building it out with we're partnered up with the Hasselgrave brothers, who did Pauly G's, Goat Town, Manhattan Inn, and have designed some shops for like Van Leeuwen and the Mass Brothers. And they do. We're really happy to have them on board. They do really great work.
Amazing woodwork, really cool lighting.
Yeah, everything's very handcrafted.
So I can't wait to see Alameda. So we'll talk to Nick about that. We'll talk to Tiago about dessert, but first,
oh yeah,
it's that time. It's the front of house time.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's the front of house.
A tremendous jingle. Really, yeah. You must find out who does those.
Every time you say that. Every time.
I'm astonished every time. So we have a repeat offender this week. I'm very excited.
I feel like she's kind of a staff writer at this point.
We should. Okay.
I will buy her drinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how I can pay her, I guess. Or bring her things. Sarah Hunt.
Sarah Hunt, you've been promoted to staff writer here at the Morning After.
It's hard to get
so
there.
Sarah Hunt has provided us with yet another hilarious tale of the woes and mishaps of the front of house world. And yet again, we would like to invite the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier, into studio here to read it for us. Dame.
My first job in New York was one of those themed little diners somewhere in the wilds of Midtown. Many interesting things happened there, one of which that sticks out in my mind was the time that the pipes blew. Yes, the pipes. Wikipedia says New York City's water supply systems is one of the most extensive municipal water systems in the world. This complex system relies on a combination of tunnels, aqueducts, and reservoirs to meet the daily needs of about 8 million residents and many visitors. I know nothing about plumbing. I'm not sure whether that day it was the water pipes, plumbing pipes, or both. I do know, however, that there was a lot of them. There were a lot of them in New York City, and they're probably pretty old and unreliable, especially in areas like Midtown. All I do know is that shortly after the start of service, a smell started wafting from no discernible source. The toilets were coughing and sputtering, and the fall drain behind the bar started backing up. Let me give you a little idea of the architecture of the space, as it may help you understand the breadth of the monstrosity to come. The front door entered a bar area which led into the dining room. This bar entry was a high-traffic area and a very popular place for happy hour. At about 4 o'clock, the high-traffic area started to fill with water. By 5 o'clock, it was a small pond. Management considered closing, but the boss insisted that no, we would overcome this obstacle. But what was the solution, I beg? What was the solution? The restaurant had a side door just past the bar that opened into the hallway of an apartment building, where we would throw the trash at the end of the evening. The manager on duty stood by the entrance and one by one, group by group, directed traffic into the apartment building, down the hallway, past garbage, through the said side door and into the dining room. Couple by couple, party by party, they continued to come, regardless of the detour. The water didn't start flowing, and by 6 o'clock the restaurant was full of people. The back waiters had dammed up the water into a kiddie pool by outlining the area with linens. The bartender was waiting in said pool, trying to keep up with the full restaurant. A little water didn't slow her, until she looked down and saw pieces of toilet paper floating around her feet. But the show must go on, folks. It certainly must go on. and that woman continued to fulfill her duties, mixing neon-colored drinks for the thirsty masses. I've never seen such acrobatics as a bartender shaking cocktails with one foot on the speed rail and another on the countertop behind it. And we were busy. She had a lot to do and a little time and floor to do it in. We made it through the entire night of service, unscathed if not a little smelly and damp. And our tips were incredible. Not going to lie, in retrospect I could have and should have walked out later, realizing the health implications of my walking through a sewage river. To the restaurant's credit, the food was nowhere near any of the problem water, but I'm pretty sure closing would have been a good consideration. The end result? An ever-expanding pool of water. One working toilet. Wads of disintegrating TP on the ground. A bartender in severe need of a chiropractor. And a big, fat wad of cash. Thank you. Thank you, Dame.
Thank you, Dame.
He's always so generous to come.
Thank you, Joe. I love the audience clap. I've actually dealt with that in New York City at a restaurant. Have you guys ever dealt with a sewage backup in a restaurant?
I have not.
Okay.
Well, maybe...
2 out of 2.
Maybe...
I mean, 2 out of 4.
Maybe the cake I could eventually afford to commission you to do will actually be a giant toilet.
Well, there you go.
Just as an homage to our first meeting.
And I'll clog it up for you.
Amazing. Amazing.
I hope not. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Tiago Silva and not talk about TP. We're going to talk about pastry.
Here on The Morning After.
You're listening to the Paper Twin Remix by Knife Show on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than 2/3 of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way. Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at wholefoodsmarket.com/sharethebuzz.
Funky jams on the radio.
We're back here on The Morning After, talking pastry. Chef Tiago Silva, corporate pastry chef for the EMM Group, just opened the General. When did that open?
We just opened in mid-January.
So you have a pretty big job, and you're a very young guy. How did you get involved in pastry to start out with, and then get to this point in a nutshell?
Yeah, pastry, I started off when I was 13. Just went to translate a simple cake decorating course for my mom. And, you know, my parents, I grew up watching them cook. My dad works in a restaurant. So it was always kind of part of my life. I wanted to be a chef in culinary side, but I never got hired as that. There was always a position for pastry. So, you know, I went to work in pastry in a restaurant. That's been my school, you know, New York City. Didn't go to college or anything and been doing it since.
And you grew up in New York?
I did. I came from Brazil when I was 8.
Wow.
And I've been in New York since.
So you speak Portuguese as well?
I do speak Portuguese.
Portuguesa.
Yeah, Portuguese. Spanish.
Listen, I played capoeira only for a brief time, and let me tell you, I did not pick up that language. It is a beautiful and intricate language.
Thank you.
Did you do capoeira in like the park with drum circles?
No, I did it at the Brooklyn Capoeira School.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, flipping, and it's like big cartwheels and things.
I remember
the
songs.
I mean, I'm being a jerk about
but that. I don't remember anything beyond that but I did learn the berimbau, which was cool.
Berimbau is cool.
Yeah.
So what was the first restaurant you got started in doing pastry?
The first restaurant that I worked in was Olive's, Todd English Restaurants, in Union Square. That was my school. I always say that's my school. I spent 3 years there, and I kind of learned all the basics, all the in and outs.
And so you said, you know, you went to this cake decorating class with your mom. What stopped or what made you go in the pastry direction versus savory?
I mean, I honestly wanted to do savory, but there was never a position for me.
Blind demand.
So it was always like, yeah, you can come here, but we only have a pastry position if you're interested. And I was like, all right, I'll take it. And eventually later on, I tried out savory, and it wasn't for me. So
do you now consider that you know, refusal the cruel hand of fate?
I think so. I definitely think so.
Your pastry success?
Yeah, I think I saw my dad cooking, and, you know, the shows were always... There's a lot of so many cooking shows, so I think, you know, when you're 15, 16, you see all these cooks who are so successful, you're like, oh, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it never worked out for me, so...
What also... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it takes a different kind of brain to do savory versus to do pastry. I don't know. I mean, maybe Nick can talk on this too, but... pastry is a little bit more of a science or of measurement, and I don't know, I could be totally wrong.
No, I think it is. I think it's something I always say. It's like, you can always, if a sauce breaks, there's a simple way. There's not a simple way, but there's a way of fixing it. If you put a cake in the oven and you didn't put baking powder, you got to start all over.
Yeah, there's definitely just a different style of work and attention to detail.
Yeah.
So with these four restaurants that you're working with, and then you've also got the bakery at the General, how do you manage that? How do you, I mean, you started with what? With Catch, or?
I started first at Chef at Catch. We had Abe and Arthur's, which I wasn't the chef at the time, but I started over with Catch, and that was our first one. It was such a big, busy restaurant mm-hmm. right off the bat, and it kind of prepared me for everything else to come, I think.
And you have been, before you were at Catch, were you doing pastry for celebrities, or did it kind of come about? Because I know Catch is kind of a celebrity haunt.
Yeah, I think it started at Abe and Arthur's, our restaurant. But they found out I could make these cakes, and, you know, they're like, do you want to do this more? And I was like, yeah. And I never really got involved with the group or restaurant that, you know, wanted to invest in it. So I was like, you know, I'll do it. You know, let's do it.
And so people would reach out to people at Abe and Arthur, and then they would reach out to you.
Yes, we have a great events team at M Group. They would reach out to them, then we would talk. It would be a whole process of sketching out a cake and coming up with the design that people wanted, and took it from there.
No, it's not just like a regular tiered cake. It's
anything you want.
I just was fortunate enough to see a couple pictures, and I saw a pair of shoes with a shoebox.
Yes.
And a Harley.
That
Harley
was Kim
Davidson,
Kardashian's, right?
With lights. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
But
so
anything.
What's the zaniest request you've ever gotten?
The Harley was pretty crazy because it was 2 days notice. So I had 2 days to make that. So it was pretty...
I have to... Okay, so obviously there are a few now of these shows and popular culture that a lot of people are familiar with about making these cakes a lot of times for celebrities, right? And one of the questions I always have that I feel like has never been answered is how is the stuff that is strong enough and durable enough to hold that mass together? How is that edible?
It's exactly my question.
What is in it?
Well, it was actually the first one I did. So the bulk of it is cake. It's actually... straight up cake, but you do have to put your support, you know, there's dowels, there's pipes, not in the cake, but supporting the cake mm-hmm. and holding everything around it. And it's super important to me that the cake tastes good. If it doesn't taste good, what's the point?
Right.
You know, ultimately, you want it to be devoured, and that's kind of the goal. But as soon as you build three layers of cake, you have to put another board and tiers and like pipes in there and make sure it's held up. But there is stuff you can't eat, but it's the cake has to be good, and it's something I really, really work hard on.
So would you say you start with sort of a spherical shape, and then you just have to shave off?
It's kind of like for the motorcycle, you kind of make a skeleton, you know, the base for the... And then you fill it up. I filled it up with, like, squared cakes. So it was a big square thing, and everybody's looking at it like, okay, that's not a motorcycle. And you just have to start carving, and, you know, it takes a little time, and... next thing you know, there's a motorcycle.
Wow.
So a lot of your desserts are really playful. I mean, and obviously building cakes like that are playful. Is that a part of you? Is that what you brought to the group? Or was that kind of something that guests coming into these restaurants are looking for?
I think it's something I like doing. And it's also part of our group. You know, they love to create memories. And I think a big way of doing that is by being playful and doing things that are familiar but has a little bit of a twist. And it's something I like to do, and it's something the group likes. That's why we kind of clicked.
kind of like a juxtaposition. So you're doing a bunch of donuts for the general.
I am.
And I saw several photos of those. What do you have on those?
So we have like cereal inspired donuts, and we have like a Fruity Pebble, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Cocoa Puff. I kind of want to do like the breakfast theme. So they kind of have like, you know how you eat your cereal, you have the cereal milk after, and you use that flavor to go in as the filling. So the filling kind of tastes like the cereal milk. But then there's also yogurt parfait, which is, it's my favorite one. There's like granola on top of the donut, and there's yogurt inside the donut. So it's a pretty cool play on that.
Is it a sweet yogurt, or is it kind of like a original Greek yogurt?
It's like a Greek yogurt, but I mellow it out a bit. It's not sweet at all, and that's why I think I like it the most, because it's like, holy crap, it's a yogurt parfait. It tastes just like it, so it's pretty cool.
And the Klondike, the liquid Klondike. Please tell me about this, because Alex showed me a picture of that too.
That's one of the things I wanted to actually, as a pastry chef, I hate chocolate. Like, I love using chocolate, but I hate chocolate desserts. But you always have to have it. It's a staple. It's a must have. People love chocolate. I'm just not that guy. But I always grew up eating chocolate cake, and there's always milk. If I had a piece of chocolate cake, I needed a cup of milk. So I said, why not put the milk on top of the dessert? So once you break that Klondike, it's kind of like your milk is going onto the cake. It wasn't intended to be a liquid Klondike, but it looked just like a little Klondike. So We're like, it's liquid, it's a Klondike, it's liquid Klondike.
So it's not actually a Klondike bar that melted in your car.
No, that wasn't
the inspiration.
I still would have eaten it.
It's actually a ganache. It's a white chocolate ganache, very loose. It only freezes at like -20. So to work with it, it's actually very hard. It's very difficult to get it right.
I know you can't be at every restaurant at once. How big is your team at this point?
I think for pastry, you know, I have 8 sous chefs. Each restaurant has 2. And then under them, they each get about 4. So you're looking at about 28 to 30 people in my staff.
And how do you maintain consistency?
I always spend a lot of time, especially when we're opening, with my staff and just working on them to do that. But also I go everywhere and I have to taste it. You know, it's also part of my job, making sure, put on a lot of weight because of it, but it's part of the job.
How many hands do you have working on your team?
Overall in total?
Yeah.
Well, each restaurant is six people, 2 sous chefs, 4 cooks. So it's just about 30.
But for pastry specifically, that's how many?
Yeah.
All around. So yeah, are you
all around?
I'm assuming, you have to be in constant contact with the entire...
Yes, mainly my sous chefs. You know, I definitely, those, they're my key players in each restaurant.
Yeah.
And I communicate with them a lot. And if there's any issues, I go to them, talk to them, they talk to me. We just have to keep an open communication. You know, I'm also learning this. I've been in this role since January, so... Mm-hmm. Something that I'm learning to do, and I think it's been going pretty well.
I mean, and to be a teacher for that many people
is tough. It's also, they want to learn. They want to work with me because they see these crazy cakes. They see these common desserts, but with the twist, and they want to know my thought process behind it and trying to work a way of getting more involved with each and every one of them. So
I've always thought about, because coming from a beverage perspective, if I drank all the wine I tasted on a daily basis, I would be, you know, I'd be living in the subway or something like that. So, you know, we spit the wine, spit the spirit, beer, whatever. Is that an acceptable thing to do in pastry? I mean, that'd be a disgusting spit cup.
I've actually worked with the pastry chef that went into the Atkins diet. So he literally he would spit everything. He would taste everything and spit it out. Well, but I don't do that personally, no.
Because you would, I mean, I feel like with wine you can get a sense of it, and you don't have to swallow that and feel that alcohol to know exactly what that wine is like. But I guess you would really need to taste every single flavor and feel the texture. Yes. And
I don't eat the whole dessert, but I definitely taste everything. No spitting out.
No spitting.
So what is what's coming up for you next?
Well,
the general.
At the general, we just want to do a couple more things for the donut area, but we're also working on our brunch, so we're gonna have brunch pretty soon, which is gonna be our next project to tackle.
Will you have any pastry involvement? Will it be different dishes? I mean, I guess you have all the donuts, which is gonna be perfect for
yes,
brunch.
Yes, that would be great for brunch, but definitely you always gotta have something sweet for brunch. So I'm still kind of working on some things, and should be fun.
So where can people check out your desserts? I know that you have your own website, right?
Yes.
What's that?
But that's just for cakes, and that's mainly for people to go check out some of my work. Mm-hmm. But if you want to have desserts, I definitely go by, you know, Catch New York, Catch Miami. Then we have the General.
Where is that located?
Which one?
I guess the General is on Bowery, right?
The General is on Bowery, Spring Street and Bowery. Catch is on 13th Street, 9th Avenue. Abe and Arthur's is on 14th Street, 9th Avenue. Catch Miami is on Collins Avenue. And we have Lexington Brass, which is on 48th and Lex. So it's our Midtown spot.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It's been great talking pastry. And maybe you can impart some of your pastry knowledge on Chardonnay's, our mythical restaurant.
Yeah, for sure.
Looking forward to that. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with Nick Padilla from Alameda on The Morning After. Let's get it on. It's on. Let's get it.
You're listening to the Tekla remix of My Boyfriend by Knife Show on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Back here on The Morning After, jumping into quite an endeavor. A friend of mine, Nick Padilla, I'm so proud of him, and I can't wait to check out his new place, Alameda.
Oh,
in
thanks,
Greenpoint.
Jess.
Where is it exactly located?
It is on Franklin and Green Street, just right off the Greenpoint stop on the G.
And why, I don't know, this seems like a loaded question, and it's not. why open a restaurant in Greenpoint?
I guess me and my partners, who are the Hasselgrave brothers, who are doing the design, and my good friend Wayne Longwell, who's been a bartender for a very long time, we all kind of just wanted to open up sort of like the quintessential neighborhood restaurant where you want to go back multiple times a week. You know, you can experience new things, but also have like some consistency, and you know everyone that works there. And we just thought that in Brooklyn, we're all starting out, so at the level we could afford to operate at, that Greenpoint had the best balance of, like, you know, neighborhood feel and community. And so we really, you know, and also we all live there too, so it just makes a lot of sense for us.
Some of my favorite New York dining experiences have happened in Greenpoint. I mean, I used to live over on Leonard and Greenpoint Ave, and that it's such a charmed area, and
sure,
it does have such a community feel. And summer alfresco dining. And
yeah, it's great.
Man.
I mean, it stays quiet. Everyone kind of knows each other. And also, I mean, obviously Greenpoint has like the best, probably the best Polish food America too.
Absolutely.
Which is always a great thing to have.
I lived in Poland off and on for 6 years, and I have had better Polish food in Greenpoint. That's
yeah,
a true
no,
story.
That makes sense. I mean, it is definitely still a Polish neighborhood, which is very cool. Because you can get a huge, like, an absurd pile of food for $10,
yeah,
and it's all really
amazing.
Good.
Pierogi, all of it.
Yeah.
So you've been cooking in New York for a while now. How many years?
Yeah, it's been about 5 or 6 years, I think.
And what places have you been at before this?
My first job in New York was at Momofuku Sambar, which was mostly just, like, making steamed pork buns and getting yelled at a lot for the first few months. And then I ended up staying there for a long time, and, like, that was really where I learned. You know, learned everything that I kind of use today. And then after that, I spent some time at Aldea and a couple other restaurants. And before we moved on to this project, I was at Brooklyn Star for a year and a half, which was also a really, really great experience.
And are you, what is the food concept at Alameda?
It's sort of it's a bistro inspired menu, sort of an American bistro menu built to support our cocktail and drink list. We're a very, like, bar-centric restaurant. The over half the seats are at the bar. So we want people to be able to, like, you know, talk and move around, but also still, like, share food. So we got a lot of inspiration from, like, you know, just like classic French bistro stuff, and also like Basque and Spanish inspired things, and then a little classic American stuff too.
Hence the bar. And I feel like some of the most diehard regulars only sit at the bar.
Right. I mean, especially restaurant people always want to sit at the bar, which is great.
Why do you think that is?
I really don't know. I feel like there's a little less formality, and, you know, when you really just want to get down to business and you know what you want and you know, like, how your order is going to go, and you don't want to have to, you know, you want to spend your time with your friends and talk to them. It's just a little easier at the bar. Or sometimes too, that's also cool to be able to interact with the bartenders if you've got some great personality back there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's a very, like, New York style of going out to eat, and we wanted to, you know, to do that.
What is the beverage side looking like right now?
Right now it's a very, like, extensive liquor list with a lot of great cocktails, and we're, like, you know, like, doing all this stuff, like making your own bitters, vermouth, a lot of great things like that, like simple twists on classic cocktails. The wine list, we're trying to do an affordable by the glass selection that's based around, you know, like, lesser known varietals, lesser known regions, natural wines, you know, cool things. Buying a lot of stuff from your friend Zev, which is awesome. Like, he's, you know, those wines are fantastic. But the most important thing is that it's at a price point that the neighborhood can afford, and also, like, a value product. And then beer, you know, we're going to have, like, a beer shot happy hour special, but we're also going to have some cooler, you know, craft beers. So
awesome. And you have an amazing design team working with you. And, you know, living in Alphabet City, I've been to the space that they built out, Goat Town and Elsa, which are both beautiful. And I've only seen a couple pictures. What's the space looking like right now at Alameda?
I mean, we're almost completely built out. We have sort of a, like, a horseshoe bar that takes over the majority of the center of the space. It's definitely the focal point. We've got a little open kitchen in back. And yeah, I mean, we're just doing, like, the final touches. You know, most of the carpentry's finished. All the, you know, all the...
It's, like, beautiful woodwork. It's that's the big focus.
Yeah, right? The tables are, you know, the tables are handmade. The back bar, which is this beautiful steel structure that runs through the center of the dining room, was it was welded and, like, put together in Bed-Stuy. Everything was assembled by hand. You know, like, there's a lot of tile work that was done. The wood for our floor was salvaged from, like, a 150-year-old warehouse in Philadelphia. It's, and, you know, like, refinished and... Yeah, it's very much like, it looks old, but it's, you know, like, very sleek and refined.
And so Wayne Longwell is your barman.
Right.
And then you've got Evan and Oliver Hasselgrave. How did you guys all get to know each other and partner in this?
Yeah. So me and Wayne opened the new Brooklyn Star when they reopened in their bigger space on Lorimer. He started as a bartender. I started as a cook there. And we worked together for about a year and a half and sort of just, you know, decided, you know, we always worked really well together. So we decided we wanted to go in on this together. So we start, you know, like, we somehow managed to secure this, like, really awesome space. And then one day we're doing all the demolition ourselves, and it's completely hilarious. Like, none of us have any sort of carpentry background or, like, construction background. And we're just, like, covered from head to toe in, like, sawdust and, like, ripping out ceilings and, like, trying to do it all ourselves. And the Hasselgraves happened to live across the street, and they just, like, walked over and were like, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" And it just from that, you know, we told them, like, what we were trying to do. And they were like, "Yeah, that sounds really cool. Like, we want to have a bar across the street that we can go to, you know, and, like, get food, and we'll help you out." And it just sort of slowly grew. We realized, you know, that partnership of, like, front of house, back of house, and design, and having the contracting expertise was, like, sort of a perfect match for us.
It's pretty serendipitous that
yeah,
lived across the street.
It's crazy. So
it's like a bad English musical. Like, "Hello, Giuseppe." They just came over. They just wandered over with their basket of fresh tomatoes.
Yeah, like, what's going on over here? Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, we have a hammer in our back pocket. Let's help.
Amazing. Yeah, they have their belts on and, like, Carhartt overalls, just ready to go.
So how far out are you guys right now? What's the timeline?
The 18th is going to be our opening day. Yeah, so it's coming up real quick.
Okay.
I'm amazed you made it here.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm amazed Tiago made it here also. He has a new baby as well. And 9 million restaurants to run.
Yeah, so I just took some time off to stay home with him, so it's fun.
It's wonderful. Nick, where exactly is the space located?
It is 195 Franklin Street on the corner of Franklin and Green.
And is there a website that people can check out?
Yeah, it's alamedabk.com.
Awesome. We're going to be right back on The Morning After with Chardonnays. What's on the menu at Chardonnays is going to be really special.
It's going to be a special one today.
It's going to be really special, so stay tuned.
Stick around.
This one's called You've Really Changed by Knife Show on the heritageradionetwork.org.
We are back here on The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. So we've been talking to a couple of talented dudes today about good food, but as we all can from time to time, I enjoy also talking about bad food. So,
or real food.
Or real food. Real people food. Look, Jesse's from Arizona. I'm from Kentucky. So we were raised on a special spoon. Which brings us to your favorite segment and mine, What's on the Menu at Chardonnays.
Ooh, uh-huh. What's on the menu at Chardonnays?
It's a great jingle. So, you know, I was recently home visiting my family, and there's a special thing and Midwestern American cuisine that happens, and that is the use of the word fusion.
Oh, yeah.
And this became popular, which is appropriate for Chardonnays. This became really popular, I think, in the 90s, at least in my part of the world. And it was Latin fusion, Asian fusion. I've yet to see Moroccan fusion, but I'm sure it's just around the corner. So in honor of my upbringing and my one of my favorite restaurants from my hometown, which will remain nameless, today for Chardonnays, I did want to revisit... a time and a place special to me, which is the Midwestern family-owned Latin fusion Chardonnays, which we're affectionately calling Chardonnays. So this week at Chardonnays at Abuela's Basement, we're going to be featuring a couple of things because kids eat free at Chardonnays. Hola, mis amigos. ¿Cómo están? It's on. With the San Juan Taco Tower of Power boasting 6 layers of Abuela's special taco mush and at least 12 ounces of Velveeta, you are not going to want to miss this fiery fiesta, I'm telling you. You're going to be burping for days and talking about it for days after. For our second course, we are just going to do a simple naked nacho. That is a single Dorito with a single slab of Velveeta and a teaspoon of whipped cream, not sour cream. This is fusion, ladies and gentlemen, and we're not afraid. For dessert here, we're going to do Tres Leches para Tres Amigos lava cake topped with choco chips and whipped cream. You can upgrade that with special rainbow sprinkles for an additional 99 cents. And with the additional upgrade, you do receive a free margarita. So it's going to be a special day. But I'm interested, since we have experts in the house, so Chardonnays is obviously our mythical restaurant that celebrates all bad food and wine trends from days gone by. I'm wondering if we were to hire you, and I'm not saying we're vetting you, okay? It's still in the talking process. But if we were to hire you for Chardonnays. Tiago, what might you be able to offer us?
Well, usually start with food, so I'm going to let Nick
Great.
Take this
You're
one
right.
first.
Right, first course, always savory. I guess bad food trends... Chardonnays to me sounds like I just keep wanting to be it to be 90s food.
Oh yeah.
So it's probably going to be a savory course in the form of a Napoleon with like some quotations around it. Maybe like a nice tilapia, a banana leaf steamed tilapia Napoleon with like wild rice and sun dried tomatoes.
Yes, anything something with really. Sun dried tomatoes
and a cilantro lime dressing for Chardonnays.
Yeah, yep,
for sure.
Maybe like a mango salsa or something.
Yep,
so good.
Garnished with some crushed Fritos.
Well, I'd like to add in there. This is our very branded dish because we need a little extra money. We're really expanding quickly, so all of these have brand names. So I'm doing a de-thawed Tyson chicken breast. We're topping that with Tostitos chili con queso, Velveeta this time. And we're crushing some Fritos on top, and we're baking that until the cheese develops a really glassy, plastic wrap kind of texture. I have to admit, I did get this recipe from my girlfriend Erin's mother, and shout out to Sherry Lee. Thank you for this recipe.
Yeah, amazing.
It's on the menu as Chardonnays.
Chardonnays. All right, it's time. I want to know.
Yeah, let's hear the pastry.
On to desserts.
Yep. Yeah, please.
So of course we have to have our dulce de leche.
Oh yeah.
We have our tres leches. Now we have a dulce de leche.
Uh huh.
And we're gonna do a trio. So we're gonna have a dulce de leche flan.
Yes.
A dulce de leche ice cream sandwich to keep it a little bit of the American. And we're gonna have a dulce de leche tiramisu.
Yes, and they're all gigantic, right? And all
huge.
On one big platter.
I do want to be clear here, though, Tiago, and we might run into some problems here. You're not
pronounced.
You can't. You're not pronouncing it right. Because at Chardonnay's, it is tres leches.
Okay. Dulce de leche.
Yeah, there you go.
Or even dulce de milk.
Now you're at Chardonnay's.
Dulce de milk, yes.
Well, I've gone to so many of those places where you've got, like a 17-year-old high school student from the local town that's just like, okay, y'all, so we are going to be doing some dulce de leche today. It's just amazing.
Quesadilla.
Yep. Yeah, nothing comes better after a chimichanga.
That language crossover is remarkable. Amazing. That's a bit what I sounded like when I was trying to speak Portuguese, just to give you a window into that time in my life. Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to try all of these delicious places and foods.
I'm hungry already.
I'm hungry.
Nick, where can we check out Alameda?
195 Franklin Street. It's a corner of Green in Greenpoint.
Tiago, where can we check out your stuff?
Ooh, it's a lot of places.
It's a lot of places. So I think you can go to emmgroup.com, right?
Yeah, go to emmgroup.com, and I'm sure you guys can find all the info there. But, Catch New York, Catch Miami, Lexington Brass, Avon Arthur's, and The General.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys. It's been wonderful to be here with you, Jen.
Wonderful to be with you, Jesse. This has been The Morning After
on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.